Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Ron Padgett, and we're here to talk about a very unusual book of his. It's called Motor Maids Across the Continent. It's published by the Song Cave Press, and it's a variety of book that I don't think you've heard about before, unless you have, in which case you're lucky. It goes back good, 40, 50 years. People have been finding pulp novels, taking whiteout to them, revising them, changing the words, and creating new, sometimes dadaistic, surrealistic, at any rate wild and interesting books as a result of the process. Now, I am very happy that Motor Maids Across the Continent is one such book. Ron Padgett, as you know if you've been listening, is a poet. His poems recently appeared in the movie Patterson for the young poet in that movie. But tell me, what were you looking at when you found what became Motor Maids?
You mean what was the original text that working from? I found an old book in a used bookshop here in New York on, I think it was West 23rd Street, and it was a dusty old volume called Motor Maids Across the Continent. I can't remember the author's name now. It was published around 1917 or something like that in the United States. And at that time, I was when I found it, I was a student, a senior at Columbia College here in New York, and I had spent the last 4 years reading Homer, Dante, Shakespeare, Thucydides. I mean, it was a steady, nonstop barrage, not only of literary classics, but also heavy-duty psychology and religion books. So, as a writer, I found that I was kind of stuffed with great literature, so I decided to try to freshen up my writing by reading differently. So I determinedly set about to read things I would never ordinarily read. I picked up a copy of a magazine called Pig Farmer's Gazette, for instance, and this book for which was been written for adolescent girls around the First World War was exactly the kind of inane literature that I would never normally think of reading. So I found this book and was just reading it originally. I just wanted to read it and get a different kind of music in my head.
I remember a friend of mine from college got his first job as a writer in New York working for the Floor and Wall Covering Journal.
Oh, yeah.
And he had to write interestingly about carpeting and elaborate wallpaper design.
Yeah.
And, you know, a good deal of what turns a writer into a robot are jobs for gazettes and publishing houses that publish serial books. I mean, I don't know how many Bobbsey Twin books there were, but probably hundreds, and those are not mentioning the Nancy Drew books and the Happy Hollister books and the hundreds of books that kept writers employed under names that were not their own.
No, of course, they were churned out and under the name of Laura Lee Hope. And they became, there was branding, basically, yeah.
What made it become a project for you, and how long ago did you begin it?
Well, I bought this book, I think it was in the spring of 1964, well, 63 maybe. And at that time, I was a student, as I said, at Columbia, and one of my professors was the poet Kenneth Koch. And for some reason, I went to see him in his office, and I walked in carrying a number of books, and one of them was this book, Motor Maids Across the Continent. And Kenneth's eye fell upon it, and he said, "May I see that book?" And I handed it to him, and he opened, he read the first page, and he grabbed a pencil, and he immediately struck out some words from it, from the first paragraph. And at the end of the first paragraph, then he wrote, "The end." So, and he handed it back to me, and it was he had in half a minute had completely transformed the feeling and the sense of that paragraph from being completely inane to being absolutely hilarious and delightful. And I also like the idea of a novel at the end of its first paragraph saying the end and then going on. He just casually handed it back to me, and I cracked up, and then we had our conversation, and I went back to my apartment, and I got out my pencil, and I went through and began marching through this book, rewriting the entire book.
And this has stayed around as a potentially published project since the 1960s?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I did was, you know, I just did it for fun. I was just having a good time, and I wasn't really reading the book. I was sort of chewing it up. And I did the first version. I got to the end, and I thought, I actually like this, but it's very hard to read, and I wanted my friends to read it, poet friends and my wife. And so I typed it up and made a little manuscript of it and made it an edition of three copies and gave one to Ted Berrigan and one to someone else, and then I kept one. And subsequently, over the years, actually, Ted then published a little bit of it, one chapter in his magazine at the time, a small magazine called C, the letter C. And I didn't think much of it. I just put it away. And then years later, I took it out again, and I read it, and I thought, you know, there's something wrong with this book. It needs to be fixed. So I went through and rewrote it, and then retyped it, and put it away, and waited some years, and took it out again, and I said, this book needs to be fixed. So I kept rewriting the book over the decades. And then it finally got into a form where I stopped saying this needs to be fixed. I kind of liked the way it was. It had gone from being a novel into a novella, really. And it seemed just the right length finally. And so it was at that point I thought, I can actually turn this thing loose onto the world. After, well, what? I began it in 64, and it's going to be published in 2017. It's a book about a small group of young women, high school girls, actually, who decide to make a car trip from Chicago to San Francisco, being escorted by the aunt of one of these girls. And this book details their adventures along the way, some of which are very strange. They weren't in the original book. The original book was completely tedious and and predictable and syrupy and awful. But I tried to take that part out and introduce a more, let's say, dreamlike or hallucinatory atmosphere onto some of the proceedings.
It fascinates me that Kenneth Koch spots this book, because he was working for many years on not a doctored novel, but a similar kind of book. It was called The Red Robins.
Yeah.
It was about pilots.
A band of merry people, young people who like to fly around the world to China and various places and have a good time. Yeah.
Yes, including characters like Santa Claus.
There's a character called Santa Claus in it. There's one called the Easter Bunny.
Yes.
And they have a tremendous fight, fist fight.
Well, you know, sections of that appeared in a magazine called Location that was edited by my friend Donald Barthelme, and he loved Kenneth Koch's The Red Robins and thought that the idea of this kind of adolescent adventure novel,
yeah,
being turned via procedures into an avant-garde or aesthetic or poetic novel was really an event waiting to happen. So the idea that Kenneth saw your version,
yeah,
and sort of inspired a procedure that is very different from his own. He wrote the whole Red Robin's whole cloth, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Kenneth wasn't much for using procedures. He was a very imaginative, inspired writer who went on his own. You know, Kenneth also, previous to all this, had published a parody of a children's story in a magazine called Locus Solus. And it's a very funny and charming little thing about a group of children that go out and go on a camping expedition. It's only, I don't know, I can't remember, 8 or 10, 12 pages, but it's quite delightful. But it was kind of a precursor to all these things we're talking about.
I'm talking with Ron Padgett about his newly published book, Long in the Works. It's what I would call a doctored novel. Many people have different names: Whiteout novel, Erasure novel. This one is called Motor Maids Across the Continent. And like some of them, they're very indebted to genre fiction. If I remember correctly, Ted Berrigan wrote a Western called, is it Clear the Range?
Yeah, Clear the Range. When Ted saw I was working on Motor Maids, he very quickly went and not to be outdone by me, he got his hands on a Zane Grey novel, I believe it was, called 20 Notches. And Ted rewrote that with the sort of Whiteout or Erasure method, and although I think he just used a pen to blacken out certain parts. And his result is, I think, absolutely brilliant. I think that Clear the Range is an absolutely brilliant piece of work. It's sort of like a comic, a really obviously comic version of Samuel Beckett or something. It's quite metaphysical and weird, too.
Oh, it's astonishing. It's
really quite a great book. My book is very light in its touch, and Ted's was much more kind of boom, boom, boom.
The poet and novelist Gilbert Sorrentino, Gil Sorrentino, took a Western himself and turned it into a novel called Gold Fools, an inversion of Fool's Gold. And he took a crummy Western novel and took every sentence and turned it into an interrogative, turned it into a question.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious to read. I think that these books where a writer or poet messes around affectionately with an earlier genre, no one would pretend that any of these books were works of art that were being destroyed. Rather, they were being enshrined, I guess.
Or recycled, let's say.
Yeah. And in the same way, I think that the pop art recycled the art it was based on. There was a period during which a lot of genre fiction in particular, thrillers and mysteries. Do I remember, what kind of book was Edwin Denby's Mrs. W's Last Sandwich?
Well, that was kind of an adventure mystery novel too, but Edwin just wrote that off the top of his head. Yeah, it was the original title was Mrs. W's Last Sandwich, and the publisher didn't like that title because it was too great, I guess. But and they made him retitle it Scream in a Cave, which was a little on the heavy side. But
well, eventually it got republished in hardcover as Mrs. W's Last Sandwich.
That's because there was a much smarter editor named Robert Cornfield, who was also a friend of Edwin's, and who republished that book, yeah.
You know, these things become prized possessions over the years, and yet it seems to me that these books get lost to time. They're so special. There's, as you say, the technique of whiting out or erasure, it, or even reinventing a genre with a special ear toward oddity and felicity. Your book is very different from Ted Berrigan's book. People will do a lot of different things, and as likely as it would seem that these would be very similar, in fact, they're very different.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not an expert on this genre, but the ones I've seen are different. Yeah, yeah. And I was just thinking, too, about, what's his name? Robert Duncan's companion, Jess.
Jess.
Mm-hmm. Jess. I mean, Jess used comic strips and did white out on them and cutting out the words and rearranging them. So he's a little bit
Dick
of a...
Yes, Dick Tracy became Tricky Cad.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, I just remember, too, you go back, there's actually a piece by Man Ray. That's one page where he went back and blacked out certain things. It was in the 1920s, I believe. So that's the earliest example I can think of that kind of procedure.
I really enjoy it. Art Spiegelman does it with some of the texts he worked on before Mouse that appeared in Underground Comics that were just there to show how much you could do with a single cell.
Yeah.
Reprinted, turned upside down, made into a mirror image of itself, frame after frame across a page, and the results astonishing.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Brainerd did the same thing with Ernie Bushmiller's character, Nancy. From
yes,
the strips.
Yes. And that book is available again. Who's the publisher of that?
Oh, the book called The Nancy Book. It assembles all of Joe Brainerd's, well, not all, but most of his transformations of the character Nancy, published by a wonderful press called Siglio Press, S-I-G-L-I-O.
Yes. I'm talking with Ron Padgett about his newly published book, Motor Maids Across the Continent. It's published by the Song Cave Press. We'll be back after this short break. I'm talking to Ron Padgett, and we're talking about Ron Padgett's book based upon, you know, what used to be called a girl novel. I don't think you could call it that anymore. But what could you call it? It's a strange...
Don't get me in trouble here.
but at any rate, it's called Motor Maids Across the Continent, and it's published by the Song Cave Press. And again, I mean, maybe I just have a failing for this kind of thing, but I find it hilarious, adorable, enjoyable. And I'd rather read this kind of thing than most works of literary naturalism. I think it depends on who you are and what your tastes are, but I love parody, and I love language. And in this book, from time to time, but repeatedly, Blaise Cendrars appears. Blaise Cendrars, the French writer, poet, novelist, I think the first thing I read about by Cendrars was an Eskimo novel, The Adventures of Dan Yak.
Dan Yak, yeah, yeah.
And he loved writing about imaginary adventures, sometimes researched, sometimes whole cloth, adventures in America. And so it's no surprise that Blaise Cendrars turns up in Ron Padgett's novel.
No, well, I'm a big fan of his work. I've translated his poetry. He wrote a lot of prose I have not translated, but... For some reason, there's a character in this in the original novel that I messed up. As a young man flying in an open cockpit, perhaps a biplane even, And he makes a he crashes next to the highway where the motor maids are traveling across Utah, and they run over to him. And it turns out that although he never identifies himself as a writer or anything, it's just this character named Blaise Cendrars who shows up. So I guess if you know who Blaise Cendrars, that it's a lot funnier. But if you don't, it's okay, because he makes he becomes quite a mysterious character. He pops in and just appears out of nowhere, as many things in this novel do.
Well, some people seem to know that he's a writer of some sort. He's surrounded by mystery, it's true. But in the book, one of the young ladies who loves him immediately says to him, "I was once thought to be telling the truth when I was actually lying. You're being accused of lying, and I think you're telling the truth." And she cuts him free. He's been tied up by police, and she severs his bonds and allows him to go free, only to appear later on to the same group again and again and again.
He just pops his head in the door every once in a while, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's a bad penny that keeps turning up.
He's a good penny, actually.
But he has himself, in his own work, American works like Kodak, I think.
Yeah, Cendrars wrote a book of poems called Kodak, which were he was sort of taking verbal photographs of various scenes in America. And he actually extracted those from a book, again, a genre book called The Mysterious Dr. Cornelius, which was just pulp fiction.
And, oh, I didn't know that at all. Yeah, I thought they were just parodies of postcards.
No, he extracted those paragraphs and doctored them and then cut them into line breaks and made poems out of them. And he was the first poet to ever make found poetry, so to speak. In fact, I know he is. And he kind of fits in. I never thought of it, but he kind of fits into our discussion here.
You know, these are the secret books. These are the books that, you know, usually people call them cult books, but I think they are the secret great books that you have to be willing to take, on the one hand, War and Peace and Middlemarch, and on the other, Alice in Wonderland and Hebdomeros and the Orchid Stories. There's a whole different style of writing that has to do with post-logic, nonsense. There's a book called The Field of Nonsense, a critical book by Elizabeth Sewell, who points out, this is a book about Edward Lear and Lewis Carroll, the degree to which you've said on my show before, Earth to Ron. I'm talking to Ron Padgett. And often as not, you're talking about writers who could say, Earth to Lewis Carroll, Earth to Edward Lear, Earth to John Ashbery. These are another kind of book, a different kind of poetry that I think is every bit as thrilling, sometimes more thrilling, than the books that we know that are more naturalistic and more hard-on-the-sleeve kind of books.
Yeah. I agree with you. I like both types.
Like both types, too, but maybe because the kind we're talking about is often overlooked or somehow lost.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Or goes without publication for many years until someone finds the manuscript. These seem special to me.
Yeah, well, another case in point is the work of Raymond Roussel, the French writer, whose work was sort of largely forgotten for decades and decades and decades. And I think it fits into this category of sort of the literature, the fantastic or very different literature. I also thought of another book came to mind called The Eater of Darkness.
Robert Coates!
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know anyone else had ever read it.
That makes two of us. No, there's some others as well. But that book came out in the 1920s, and a very small edition printed in Paris in English, and just disappeared, and was reissued briefly in paperback in the United States, I think in the late 50s or early 60s, as a Capricorn paperback. And that book must have sold about 3 copies, and it was pulped and disappeared. That book is even in that edition, is very hard to find.
Yeah, I think Robert Coates, living in Paris, was also an art critic for The New Yorker.
Yeah, he came back to New York and wrote a lot of pieces for The New Yorker. I did a little research on him later. And he also wrote some extremely conventional novels later, too, which didn't interest me as much as the Eater of Darkness, which was once described.
Short stories, too, yeah.
Yeah, the first Dada novel, someone called it. And it's an interesting, very strange book, and it certainly fits into the category of other.
Oh, I'm so happy you thought of it. I still have that Capricorn copy.
I do too. Oh.
Well, it's nice to know. Here we are in Ron Padgett's apartment, where the second copy of The Eater of Darkness probably resides. There's one in Los Angeles as well. And we are talking about Motor Maids Across the Continent. It is Ron Padgett's version of a doctored novel, and it's delightful, thrilling to read, published by Song Cave Press. And thank you very much, Ron, for talking to us about it.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I enjoyed it.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. This show was taped in the apartment of Ron Padgett in New York City. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm. We are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Richard Bausch is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.